All right, well, if you've got your Bibles, open to 1 Corinthians 11, where we are going to choose a very easy passage to work through. I'm kidding, a little tongue-in-cheek. Nate exposited, I thought, very well Genesis 2 and 3, which probably is the most clear passage on gender distinctions. We are going to go to 1 Corinthians 11. Now, we're not going to unpack everything in here. It's got head coverings and a number of things. I want to stay at 40,000 feet and just kind of deal with the fact that Paul is recognizing the fact that there are differences. So if you don't get anything else out of it and you kind of get hung up on a couple of the nuances of the passage, at least walk away with that understanding. So I'm going to start off with two questions. Why are we so hesitant in our culture to admit that there are differences between men and women? And I'm even in that question, I'm making an assumption that there are. So that's a loaded question. But why in our culture are we so hesitant to even admit it?
We want everything to be equal.
Okay, we want everything to be equal. Why else?
That's enough.
There are other reasons. Why?
I think it's, we see, you know, people trying to make right wrong and wrong right just to be, I think some just to be different.
Sure, just to be antagonistic. If anything that's been held to for thousands of years can't be right. I mean, look how advanced we are.
We're not progressive.
Right. The whole concept of evolution applies, at least theoretically, to not just the physical being, but also what we accept. You hear people say, look, just accept something like gay marriage and be on the right side of history. I have a friend who always says that, and I always remind him, I don't care about the right side of history. I just want to be on the right side. History can be wrong. I think that's one that we almost get bored. Let's come up with some new things to argue about and to just kind of throw out there. What else?
Does the feminist movement have anything to do with it?
Sure, and I think that we even need to stop and define terms when we throw out something like feminism, because I'm going to make a statement later on. I think Paul's the first feminist. And people are going to go, really? He sounds misogynistic to me. I don't think he is. He makes some statements that, given the cultural context, were mind-blowing and would really open up doors for women in ways that the Jewish and the Greek community didn't allow. So I think some of it just that has been infiltrated. Sure. What else?
People don't want to be told what to do. And I mean, I have a coworker who just doesn't. She wants everything to be right and that everyone's good and everything's happy and that kind of thing. So if that requires something like that.
Good. Yeah, some of it's this mindset in America that you can be anything you want to be. We throw that down our kids' throat from day one, and I always tell my girls, no, that's not true. Maybe I'm a wet blanket on the dreams of my kids, but no matter how much I wanted to be an NBA basketball player, it wasn't going to happen. There's not a huge market for 5'10", average speed, average shooters. There's just not a huge market for it. So I think sometimes we say you can be anything you want. Well, what if what I am, it doesn't make me happy? And I think we've all had those moments. Why can't I be like so-and-so? Why can't I have these options open? Why am I not more intelligent in this regard? And even within the church, we look and say, man, I wish I had that gift. I wish I had that gift. Or why can't I be doing that? We have a tendency to not want to be who God has designed us to be. So your second question is, why do you think we have such a hard time balancing equality and distinction? Why is that concept so difficult for us to grasp, that we are equal and yet distinctive?
Part of it is that we've lost the original meaning of the word discriminate. To discriminate just means to see a difference between.
Sure.
But it has such a negative connotation in our society that as soon as you start talking about differences, people immediately go to discrimination and what that's come to mean in our society.
Good. Good point. What else?
Seems like some of the distinctions seem more glorious or have more rewards outwardly or seem stronger, and then there's a weaker whatever element that people don't want to give in to.
Absolutely. And I think at the end of the day, our biggest reason, and I only have 20 minutes, so I got to kind of keep this moving. The biggest reason is that we put cultural values on things rather than biblical values on things. We look and say, culture values this. Therefore, we need to value this, and these things begin to seep into the world, into the church. So, for example, my wife is a stay-at-home mom, and this is not, I'm not making a statement that women should be at home. That's not it at all. But there are many people who would say that's not a job. I'm going to be like, are you kidding? My wife's down and out with the flu right now. That's a job. Because I've got to do it, and I'm not very good at it. I made dinner tonight, and I just threw some things on the table, and it was missing silverware and all kinds of things, and Abby looks at me like, Dad, like, sorry, we're just in survival mode here. And yet I look, and you know, what was the thing I valued most about my mom was her presence. It was her presence. She was just always there, both good and bad. And there were times I was like, Mom, you're still here. But there was a presence that my mom had, and the world would say, no, go do something with your life. And my mom said, I did. I'm going to try to raise two boys in, you know, to glorify the Lord. That will be my lasting impact on this culture and hopefully in the church, and hopefully I have impact for generations. She just said, I'm not buying that. This is the job that the Lord has given me to do. I'm going to do it well, whether culture values it or not. And that's just an example. I'm not making a statement that women, you need to be staying home. I'm making a statement that says we sometimes just value the wrong thing. We bought into what culture and society has told us we need to value. Because of that, we say we can't be equal. Everything has to be the same if there's going to be an equality of value here. And I don't think that that's necessarily a biblical position. So I'm going to read this text. And I don't miss out on the main point, because you're going to want to get hung up on a handful of things. And I see none of you have your head covered, so you're all sinning right away. I'll address that with your husbands later. All right, so here we go. Starting in chapter 11, we're going to look at verse 2. Now I commend you because you remember me in everything and maintain the traditions even as I had delivered them to you. Now what question immediately comes out? What tradition, right? I mean, when you guys read the text, I hope you dialogue with the author. I hope you, Paul, what are you talking about here? What are the traditions? All right, so he commends them. He says, you're doing well. And then he throws in a but. All right, sometimes Paul often follows up that this is a but. All right, you're doing well here, but I need to address something. He says, but I want you to understand that the head of every man is Christ, the head of a wife is her husband, and the head of Christ is God. Every man who prays or prophesies with his head covered dishonors his head. But every wife who prays or prophesies with her head uncovered dishonors her head. Now, what's he talking about there when he says head? He's not talking about if a woman doesn't cover her head, she dishonors herself. She dishonors her husband. Her husband, if he prays or prophesies with his head covered, he dishonors Christ. He had just laid that out the verse beforehand. Since it is the shame if her head were since it is the same as if her head were shaven. For if a wife will not cover her head, then she should cut her hair short. But since it is disgraceful for a wife to cut off all her hair or shave her head, let her cover her head. For a man ought not to cover his head, since he is the image and glory of God, but woman is the glory of man. Now, what word is left out there in verse 7 in regards to the woman? Image, right? Because Eve is not created in the image of Adam. Eve is created in the image of God, but she is the glory of Adam. For man was not made from woman, but woman from man. Neither was man created for woman, but woman for man. That is why a wife ought to have a symbol of authority on her head because of the angels. That brings up a whole other question, doesn't it? Nevertheless, in the Lord, woman is not independent of man, and then he throws this in, nor man of woman. For as woman was made from man, so man is now born of woman, and all things are from God. Judge for yourselves, is it proper for a wife to pray to God with her head uncovered? All right, so I'll go on, sorry. Does nature itself not teach that if a man wears long hair, is it a disgrace for him? But if a woman has long hair, it is her glory, for her hair is given to her for a covering. If anyone is inclined to be contentious, we have no such practice, nor do the churches of God. So it's almost as if Paul says, look, you want to argue this? It's fine, we have no room for it. Don't argue it. Creation teaches it, nature shows it, end of case. Let's just move on. It's a nice way to kind of cut off all discussion, I think. So there's a lot of things here. Now, what do we know is one of the major issues facing the Church of Corinth? Where does Paul begin his letter? The biggest admonition that he has to throw out at them is in regards to what? Yeah, there is some immorality, certainly. Yeah, in what way? In their divisions. They're a divided church. They have factions. Remember, I follow Paul. I follow Apollos. I'm really spiritual. I follow Jesus. And he's saying, look, don't do that. We don't follow these people. He says, God's the one who gives the growth. He's the hero of the story. We don't necessarily follow these things. So you have these divisions in the church. This would have been a really good time for Paul to say, look, there are no distinctions, male, female. It doesn't matter. Be unified. I mean, it would have been a perfect time for him to say, you want to do away with divisions? Let's do away with divisions. Let's just all come together and hold hands and sing kumbaya and embrace what God has given, do away with distinctions all across the board. But he doesn't. And it should stand it should stand out when you read through this letter. It says, man, there are divisions and factions. And yet Paul makes a point of drawing distinction here between men and women. And he wouldn't have had to, except that I think he had to because of where the culture was specifically in that church. Now, it's interesting that he does really bring up the fact that we have different roles, we reflect different things, and yet at the same time he makes a point of saying, look, woman is not independent of man and man is not independent of woman. He could have left that little part off at the end if he really wanted to make a good sexist women stay in your place type of statement, but he doesn't because he understands that women have a significant role. That man comes from woman in the same in a different way that woman came from man, but in a parallel way. Now he draws a distinction in three levels here. All right, so he draws a distinction that the relationship that man has with Christ is similar to the relationship that woman has with man, and then is similar to the relationship that Christ has with God. And we say, oh, but there's a unity there, and we say yes, but there's also a distinction there, right? I mean, that's the mystery of this Trinity that we try to grasp, and the fact that Christ submits to the will of the Father, and the fact that man submits to Christ, and the fact that woman submits to man. Now, submission is a loaded term in our culture, but why?
It's not been done biblically.
Yeah, I mean, some of it's that we've just not seen it done well. Why else? What baggage does the word submission have?
There's a ruling over the concept behind it.
Yeah, it seems to be, it's a harsh word. It almost seems to be oppressive. What else?
People confuse it with subordination.
Oh, good. Right. Yeah, to confuse it with subordination. Is it hard for you guys to submit to a good boss? To a boss that you know appreciates you, to a boss who loves you, to a boss who wants to see your best and puts you in positions to do well. Do you have a hard time submitting to that boss? No. You have a hard time submitting to a husband who loves you as Christ loved the church. We look at Ephesians 5. Love your wife as Christ loved the church. Wives, submit to your husbands. If I'm loving my wife as Christ loved the church, then submitting to me is a piece of cake. She'd say, why wouldn't I do it, right? I mean, if you're laying down your life for me and you're sanctifying me and doing all the things that we're called to do in that regard, it's not a real difficult task. But notice, so you guys have chosen not to have your head covered, right? So you've made a decision where you've landed on this passage, whether you've studied it or not. But notice that Paul does not take the argument to culture. Now, it's pretty interesting. Where does he go back as he's laying down a hierarchy for authority here and a hierarchy for at least the distinctions to be made? Where does he go? It's not a cultural argument. He makes a creational argument. He makes a creational argument, and this is important because largely is it about the created order. So look at verse 7. For man ought not to cover his head, since he is the image and glory of God, but woman is the glory of man. For man was not made from woman, but woman from man. Neither was man created for woman, but woman for man. Now we must be clear here that woman is not made in the image of man. We talked about that at the beginning. But of God. But Paul does say that she reflects the what of man? The glory of man. She reflects the glory of Adam, but she still has a distinctiveness in and of herself, which Paul will lay out in other letters, specifically in 1 Timothy. What's he say? What role does he lay out for women? He says, you have a distinctive role that no man can ever have. You guys, childbirth. And just because our culture doesn't value that, Paul does. He says, this is one thing that is distinctive. There was a headline earlier, and Abby, if any of you guys know my 12-year-old, she's my black and white, just definitive, opinionated, doesn't see any gray in the area. And there was a headline that said, man gives birth. And Abby looked at it, and she said, Dad, that's the dumbest thing I ever read. And I said, well, what do you mean? So she said, men don't give birth. I said, now I have to walk her through this culturally. You know how hard it is to walk a 12-year-old through where our culture is in regards to some of these things? It used to be just a fundamental thing. I mean, right away, boy, girl. These, and I'm not discounting the fact that there can be some confusion. We live in a fallen world, and there's a grace for that. I get it. But trying to navigate a headline with your 12-year-old, man gives birth, is a really difficult conversation to have. Because she would say, no, men don't. A woman who wants to say she's a man may have given birth, but men don't give birth. And not at least in the way that we are used to. And so, for instance, let me give you something. Just because a woman does, or culture doesn't value these the role of women necessarily, you know, we want to say, well, we should do away with those. What about something like meekness? Our culture doesn't value meekness, does it? But has anybody ever said, let's do away with meekness? Just let's get rid of it. Because our culture doesn't value it, and we're part of the church, let's just get rid of it altogether. We don't need meekness in the church. Culture doesn't value it. Throw it out. We'd never do that. And yet for some reason, we've drank the Kool-Aid that just says, look, our culture is not going to value these roles, and so we're just going to do away with them altogether. And I think it, frankly, has put us in a really difficult spot in regards to the church and the way we interact with the world. So Paul's main point here, I think, is that there are differences here. That when a woman uncovers her head, and she's worshiping the Lord, she's actually reflecting the glory of man. Covers her head so that she's not reflecting Adam, right? And the fact that Adam uncovers his head because he's now in the image and reflecting the glory of Christ. And so Paul, whether or not, again, I don't want to get caught up on the head covering issue. That's not the point here. The point here is that there is a distinction that is being made here that Paul had every possibility to do away with to create unity in the church, and he doesn't. Instead, he says you need to embrace your distinctiveness. And so I kind of want to close up here with when Paul tells a woman that she can come and learn, what's he say? Come and learn with all quietness and what? And submission. He says, I permit a woman to come learn with quietness and submission. Now, the Jewish men would have said, what? Women can learn? They're not allowed in this stuff. What are they doing? The Greeks would have said, no, they're property. Why are you inviting them into this presence to learn? And so this is a feminist statement that Paul makes when he says, I invite them to come and learn. And we say, yeah, but he says with quietness and submission, I'm a school teacher. What's the posture of all learning? Quiet and submissive. It would be the same instructions he would lay down for a man coming to learn. You come and learn with a posture of quietness and submission. Now, he does begin to lay out some other things. He says, I don't permit a woman to exercise authority over a man, and he does some things which I'm sure will come up in some of the other sessions here. But notice that woman is not created as an exact replica of Adam. There already was an Adam. And it was good that, and it wasn't good that he was alone. And he was created, what's the word that was used? Eve was to be a helper, a helpmate. And guess what? The two of them together are created in the image of God. Genesis makes a point, male and female. There's a distinction. And guess what, church? We need more godly women doing things in the church, doing things in the family, doing their role in the same way that we need more men in the church, more men doing their role. And so what's more important, a hammer or a nail for getting a job done? I mean, think about it. We look and say, what's the more glorious tool? The hammer, right? I mean, that's a manly, there's my sexism coming through, that's a manly tool, right? But nails, they're a dime a dozen, at least it looks on the surface, until you need one. I was doing a project last week, I needed a nail. I didn't have a nail, I had a screw. You ever try to hammer a screw? It didn't work. And now there are other ways to get the job done. I've had to grab a rock before and tried to hammer a nail. And guess what happens to the nail? It bends. So when we look at this and we say we've got to fight this cultural tendency that wants to put its value system on what happens in the church and what happens in the family and what happens across gender, because in some ways we say, God, you don't know best. I know you're the creator, but you don't really know best. And if you guys had a question on how to run any invention, you say, I don't know how this works, but you had access to the manual and the creator's brain, it seems like you'd want to go there first as opposed to saying, well, I know you've set out these distinctions here, but I was talking with a group of friends over here, and we think that this is the best way to use this thing and to solve this problem. And the creator of the invention would say, you're a fool. I have the answers. And guess what? It'll work. It'll work well when you will just embrace the differences that the tools were designed to do. And you started a little bit late, so I get 30 more seconds. And so is it wrong to ask for, you know, I've got four daughters at home. And I don't know what the Lord's going to do with them. I don't know what they're, you know, I just, at this point, I just hope they stay out of jail. So but there are things that are just, girls are just naturally good at. And is it wrong to stereotype those things and rather than just celebrating them? My kids are sick. Guess what they call, middle of the night? Mom, why don't they come running into my arms? I hear them. Kirsten's still, I get up, I'm like, sweetie, I'm here. You don't need mom. Oh, they push me away. I don't want to go, mom. Why? I can be nurturing. You know, I mean, I can do these things, but why do they want mom? Because it's just different, isn't it? It's just different. And that's okay. And we as a church need to push back and celebrate those things because they're abundantly evident. If you need a jar opened in the house, it's just good to have dad around. And my wife doesn't go, get away. I got to get this. Gloria Steinem says, I need to open this jar myself. No, she does this and then she hands it to me and I open it up and I don't hold it over her head and say, no pickles for you. You can get the jar open. I don't lord it over her. No, we worked well together because God just made us differently. And two Nates in a family would be a disaster. Be a disaster. And so I thank the Lord that God provided a softer, sweeter, more nurturing, kinder counterpart to make that family work. And so I encourage you guys, the distinctions are okay. In fact, I think they're good. What would the church look like if it just had a bunch of guys? That would not be a good church, would it? Not at all. So, all right, Nate. So I left you with a lot of questions from 1 Corinthians 11. The goal was to just lay out the fact that Paul could have done away with distinctions right there. He doesn't. He embraces them. And then he does lay out a couple of cloudy things for you guys to work through in your own devotions.
And he's going to leave. So he won't be
able to. That's right. I got to go to my youth group, small group. Yeah. So ask them why their wives don't have their heads covered, and then just let me know what the answer is.
All right. Thanks, man.